Listener supported. WNYC Studios.
You're listening to All of It on WNYC. I'm Allison Stewart. Thanks for spending some time with me today. If you've been listening to the station a lot this week, you know we have a series called Covering Climate Now, leading up to the UN Climate Action Summit on Monday, September 23rd. On our show, this means that all week we're taking a look at the way we discuss climate change and how we address it in our everyday lives. As part of this series, we're joined now by the author of the book Inconspicuous Consumption, The Environmental Impact You Don't Know You Have. It's by Tatiana Schlossberg, who has covered climate change and the environment for the New York Times. As she writes in her book, quote, "The physical things we interact with every day and lots of our daily activities don't exist in a vacuum. They're much more connected to each other, to global climate change, and to each one of us than we think." Tatiana, thanks for joining us.
Thank you so much for having me.
So you've covered science and climate for the Times. What wasn't being addressed about the climate change issue that you really wanted to write about in a long form?
Well, my former colleagues at the New York Times are doing a fantastic job, but I often felt frustrated about the scale of the conversation. You know, to me, it felt like on the one hand, it was, you know, plastic bottles, and on the other hand, it was, you know, transformation of the electric grid within 10 years. And it felt to me like there had to be something in between that would make it both, you know, relevant and also interesting to people and help them to see themselves in that story. And so I wanted to write this book that was about, you know, all of the different ways that the stuff that we use and interact with every day, you know, connects to this issue in ways that, you know, we are not immediately apparent from how we use them necessarily. And so that's why I wanted to write the book.
So you divide the book up into four groups: tech and the internet, food, fashion, and fuel. So let's start with electronics and tech. You talk about the impact of our digital lives on the physical world, video streaming, cell phones, sometimes the physical wires that make the internet possible. In the beginning, you take your reader to Iceland. What is happening in Iceland?
Well, it's really interesting. So basically what's happening there is that there is an enormous data center that's at a former NATO base. And, you know, some of the cables that go, that connect Europe and North America online, you know, land momentarily in Iceland. And so the reason that they're there, this particular data center, is to take advantage of that particular location, but also because it's cold there, they don't have to use as much electricity to cool their servers, which get really hot from, you know, the way that we use them and the things that we ask them to do, which is being on all the time and sending data around the world.
You write about something that I think is going to make a lot of people upset about streaming videos online, and that it can be incredibly wasteful. How so?
Well, so basically, you know, in 2011, a study that I read found that we watched about 3.2 billion hours of video that year. In 2017, we watched about 114 billion hours of video online. So the growth of that is really, I don't know if there's something beyond exponential, but feels pretty insane. So watching that much video, and video now represents, I think, around 70% of the internet, uses a lot of electricity from the servers to, you know, store that information and send it to us. And so we're using much, much more electricity and data in order to watch video than we used to use, you know, when the internet was simpler and we weren't watching as much video. So so I think, you know, it's not necessarily that streaming a video is more energy intensive than producing a DVD, but now that we watch so much video, we've kind of canceled out whatever gains we did have.
So I don't think people are going to stop streaming videos online. So what do you recommend we do? Is there something we can do to stream more efficiently?
Well, you know, a lot of this isn't actually on us, unfortunately. This is, you know, which is one of the points that I try to make in the book, which is, you know, that we shouldn't feel guilty as individuals necessarily for the way that these systems all work together, but we should feel collectively responsible for making them better. And one of the ways to do that is to put pressure on tech companies. And Greenpeace has been doing a really good job of that. But, you know, to make sure that they are either installing renewable energy in their, you know, on their campuses, facilities, or else entering into agreements with utilities to add renewable capacity to the grid and improving their own efficiency as well.
My guest is Tatiana Schlossberg. The name of her book is Inconspicuous Consumption, The Environmental Impact You Don't Know You Have. I remember the first time somebody ever told me about vampire power, and it sort of, I felt bad because I knew I was doing it. Explain to folks what vampire power is.
So vampire power kind of refers to the electricity that our appliances use when we think that they're off, even though they are maybe, they're plugged in or so, excuse me. So basically, you know, even if we think sometimes we've turned something off, it isn't really off because it might have a light or a clock or a remote connection or a, you know, what now increasingly a Wi-Fi connection. And so, you know, even though for each one of these individual appliances, the electricity draw might be very small, overall, you know, it could add up. There was a study in California that found that like a quarter of the residential electricity load was coming from devices that were plugged in but not being used or not on.
So the vampire analogy is the sucking
yes,
of the electricity.
Sorry, right, yes. I usually take for granted that, you know, we all know what the vampire power refers to.
Yeah, we got the vampire thing. So it was interesting to read about e-commerce. And if you could tell us a little bit about some of the environmental issues that e-commerce has created.
Yeah, so I wanted to write about e-commerce because I felt that so much of the conversation about e-commerce was, there was a lot of hand-wringing about, you know, all the cardboard coming into our house and how bad people felt about ordering something online. And so I wanted to find out if it actually was sort of, you know, quote unquote worse for the environment or added to our carbon footprint in significant ways. And what I found I was really was surprised by, which is that we basically use, so over the last decade or so, e-commerce has quadrupled in size in terms of amount of money spent online, but our cardboard usage has stayed pretty much the same. And that's because things are packaged more efficiently for the most part. But, you know, now the cardboard's coming to us instead of going to a store, and we're way worse at recycling it than a store is. So, you know, retailers recycle 90 to 100% of their cardboard, and we top out at around 25. So that's one piece of it. And then also, you know, when we drive to the store, if we're driving, which is in New York, we're not always doing, but I hear that in other parts of the country they do that. You know, we might not plan our trips in the most efficient way possible, but a logistics company like UPS or FedEx, they do, because they want to use the least amount of gas possible. So that's why they do things like avoiding left turns and things like that. But the problem, so they actually can make these trips more efficiently than we do individually. The problem is when we want two-day shipping or next-day shipping, you know, all of that goes out the window because there's a much smaller time frame in which that delivery can be made. And so, it, you know, the truck might go out half empty or, I guess, half full, depending on how you look at it, to make the delivery to me. And, you know, as opposed to kind of fitting it into that, to the, you know, whatever best place it is in the journey. And when we buy online, we return more. So we return about 35% of what we buy online, as opposed to, you know, between 6 and 15% of what we buy in a store. And that might mean additional trips for trucks or, you know, us to the store to return something again.
My guest is Tatiana Schlossberg. The name of her book is Inconspicuous Consumption, The Environmental Impact You Don't Know You Have. You devote a section to food, and you specifically go in on organic food. What are some of the environmental pitfalls of growing organic food?
Right. So, you know, this was another area like e-commerce where I, you know, I had heard a lot, or kind of the conventional wisdom was that organics are better. And, you know, in many ways, in terms of, you know, soil health and water health and preserving biodiversity, you know, organic food can provide meaningful advantages. The problem with organic food is that it produces a much lower yield. So it produces around, you know, per acre, 75 to 80% as much food as conventionally grown agriculture. And so currently globally 1% of all the food that we grow is grown organically. You know, if we were to increase, if everyone ate organic food, we would have to clear cut many of the world's forests in order to have enough agricultural land to feed everybody. And so, you know, there are so many problems with industrialized agriculture, which I write about in the book, in terms of, you know, water pollution, you know, rural drinking water communities and dead zones and, you know, biodiversity, soil health, all these other things. So there, I think that there has to kind of be a happy medium where we are taking advantage of the, you know, revolutionary gains in science, but also, you know, working with the earth to make sure that our systems are sustainable.
In the section about fashion, you focus on five aspects of fashion: denim, athleisure, fast fashion, viscose rayon, and cheap cashmere. Polyester seems to be a big problem. You write that, yeah, MIT calculated that the global impact of producing polyester alone was somewhere between 706 metric tons of carbon dioxide, or about 185 coal-fired power plants emit a year. What are some of the biggest concerns around polyester's impact?
So that's a huge one. I mean, you know, I think it's sometimes we don't think about it because of, like, the way that it feels and we're wearing it, but, you know, all of these synthetic fibers are made of oil. And so, you know, to extract that from the ground and, you know, turn that into a textile fiber is a very energy intensive process that clearly results in a lot of emissions. The problem with synthetic fibers that I focused on in the book was that they are responsible for much of the microfiber plastic pollution that is found in the oceans and now increasingly throughout the rest of our ecosystems, and that's because it, you know, can fly off when we're wearing these clothes or spin out in the wash. And some scientists think that microfiber plastic pollution, not exclusively from textiles, but about, I think, around a quarter from textiles, is the most abundant form of pollution on Earth. And so I think, you know, I think we think of our clothes as very intimate things that, you know, we wear and they don't kind of have a life beyond that once they get to us. But that, to me, was a very powerful example of how, you know, we're contributing to the problem of ocean plastic pollution in ways we don't think about, even if we've stopped using a plastic straw.
Well, when you talk about organic fibers, cheap cashmere, there's a goat situation that you write about.
There is a big goat situation, yeah. excuse me. Yeah, this was another area where, you know, I had some trouble writing the fashion section because there wasn't the same kind of scientific literature that existed around technology and food. And I think that's because it's something that has, you know, been seen as something women are interested in, so maybe hasn't been taken quite so seriously. But so to write about fashion, I had to write about, you know, five sort of discrete elements and to give a sense of the industry. And one of the most impactful materials is cashmere. And for instance, Stella McCartney, and you know, doing an environmental profit and loss analysis of her company, found that it was the most impactful material that they used. And so now she only sources you know, recycled fabric, cashmere, or discards from other people. But basically what happens is that, you know, to meet the global demand for cashmere, there is a huge proliferation of goats in Mongolia and China. And these goats, they graze on grass, but they pull it up by the roots, and then they have these really sharp hooves that break up the soil. And so the soil is loose, it's destabilized. And additionally, Mongolia is experiencing climate change at a faster rate than the rest of the world. So, you know, the average surface temperature of the Earth has increased by about 1 degree Fahrenheit, but in Mongolia, it's about 4 degrees Fahrenheit. So the new dust made by the goats and being drier conditions created by climate change mean that the dust blows across this landscape and adds somewhere around 1,000 square miles of desert every year, which is like a Rhode Island of desert. And then that dust also blows east and meets up with soot and other pollutants from factories and coal-fired power plants in Beijing and other cities in China, and worsens the air pollution there. And then, in about 5 days, often in the spring, comes to the west coast of the United States and contributes significantly to air, you know, air pollution here. And so that is, to me, I was really surprised to learn all of that because it was something that I hadn't considered at all. But also to see that, you know, again, like if we don't necessarily think that buying a cashmere sweater at Uniqlo in New York has anything to do with not only air pollution in China, but air pollution in California. And, you know, to understand how these issues are all connected is really important. And also to see that, you know, yes, China has serious problems with, you know, industrial pollution, but we're not separate from that. You know, as Americans, they're making lots of things that we buy. And so I think it's important for us to see our role in these global problems.
My guest is Tatiana Schlossberg. The name of her book is Inconspicuous Consumption, The Environmental Impact You Don't Know You Have. We're talking to Tatiana as part of our Covering Climate Now series here at WNYC. And Tatiana, you end your book with fuel, and you write it as, quote, arguably the most important problem to solve. Is it the fuel itself, or is it the way that we use the fuel, or both?
I think it's a little bit of both. I mean, fuel, and in this case, I'm referring to fossil fuels. And so, you know, those are inherently problematic in terms of, you know, climate change, but also in terms of pollution. And, you know, but also we use so much more electricity. We drive so much more. We do all of these things so much more than we used to, kind of even outpacing the growth of our population in this country. So it really is a question of, I think, both material and of scale.
The name of the book is Inconspicuous Consumption, The Environmental Impact You Don't Know You Have. Tatiana Schlossberg, thanks for joining us on all of it.
Thank you so much for having me. I'm really glad to get to talk to you.
Coming up after the break, June Diane Raphael, actor, writer, and co-host of the podcast How Did This Get Made, will talk to us about her new book, Represent, The Woman's Guide to Running for Office and Changing the World. Stay with us. More all of it after a break.